Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome again to the RTC Weekly Download, where we explore old-time radio. And today we're exploring the schedule of the Radio Theater Channel. Our change is now in effect. And let's go to the shows that we have in the 8th hour. So we're going to feature in the 8th hour Dragnet. That's followed by Escape. So we'll start off with Dragnet and the adventures of Joe Friday, if you will, while he solves all the crimes in Los Angeles, or at least a good portion of them. Here's Jack Webb as Detective Joe Friday in an episode entitled Body Buried in the Nursery from September 3rd of 1949.
Pet Milk Show, usually heard at this time, has moved to a new time period on Sunday nights. Be sure to hear Larry Douglas and Kay Armon on the new Pet Milk Show tomorrow night on NBC.
And now, here's another in NBC's great parade of new shows.
Gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to a homicide detail. A man's wife has suddenly dropped from sight. On the surface, it appears only as a routine missing persons case. You start to investigate. Suspicion grows. There is evidence of possible foul play. Your job? Find the woman or find her murderer.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. Investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, September 15th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from lunch, and it was 12:56 when I got to room 42. Homicide.
Hi, Joe. Waiting for you.
Hiya, Ben. Al.
Hi.
I hear you got something for us.
Here's a report right here. Gardner by the name of Eric Kelby called in day before yesterday. Said his wife disappeared from their home out in the valley Sunday night. Says he thinks she left him.
That happens every day, Bargetti.
Not this way, it doesn't. Walsh and I went out yesterday to interview the guy. Story doesn't add.
Why not?
None of her clothes are missing. None of her luggage. She even left her pocketbook behind, full of money. Found out from the neighbors a missing woman is a 17-year-old boy by a former marriage.
So what?
An only child. Mother dotes on the kid. Shouldn't even say goodbye to him.
How did this Eric Kelby impress you?
Pretty grouchy with Walsh and me. No cooperation.
Wants to find his wife, doesn't he?
I don't know if he does or not. It's no help, I'll tell you that.
Can I see that report a minute now?
Oh, here you are.
Agnes Trumbull Kelby, age 39.
Kelby's her second husband. First one died a little after the boy was born.
Mm-hmm. Disappeared Sunday night from her home, 546 Belasco Road, between 7 and 8 o'clock. When did Kelby call in?
Monday afternoon. Said he thought his wife might be spending the night with her sister. When he found out she wasn't, called us.
Did you meet the boy while you were out there, Borghetti?
Yeah, that's another thing. Kid came riding in on a bike while we were talking to one of the neighbors. Trying to talk to him, but the old man came out hustling him inside the house. Then he starts eating us out.
What'd he say?
Told us it was our job to find his wife, not to go prying into her stepson's affairs.
Well, that's a new slant.
How about her friends and relatives around here, Al? Any besides her sister?
Walsh located a couple of her aunts. I don't think he's checked them yet, though. I'll tell you, boys, this is one I'll bet on.
Maybe. You got the names of Mrs. Kelby's relatives?
Yeah, right over here. Sure wish we had a chance to talk to that boy.
Yeah. How's it feel to you, Ben?
I don't know. Notice anything else funny about the guy, Al?
I don't know. Well, here's those names, Joe.
Thanks.
Kelby was upset, all right. For some reason, he didn't strike me as reacting the way a normal guy reacts when his wife disappears.
All right, Al. How would you react?
Bargetti's worrying again.
Oh, now listen, boys. It's no fooling matter. This is one I'll bet on. It's a homicide.
All right. How about a copy of this report?
Yeah, where'll I get the phone? Missing persons, Bargetti. Who's that? Oh. Yes. Yes. About what? Oh, sure. All right, son. 4 o'clock. Yeah. Goodbye. That was Kelby's stepson.
What'd he want?
Think something's happened to his mother.
In police work, missing persons detail is not a department separate in itself. It is organized as a part of the Homicide Bureau. According to Bargetti, who took the call, the boy said he suspected his stepfather, and he didn't want him to know of any meeting between him and police officers. He would meet the officers that afternoon at 4 p.m. in a restaurant on the corner of Hollywood Boulevard and Fairfax Avenue. At 3:15, Ben and I left the office and drove out to the meeting place, the Dairyland Fountain and Coffee Shop. We arrived there at 3:45. At 5:08, the Kelby boy still had not arrived.
Youngster's not very prompt.
Well, let's wait a little while longer.
Yeah. Well?
Yeah, thanks.
Want some more coffee?
No, thanks. Well, I guess the boy isn't going to show.
Think something's happened?
15 minutes after we left the coffee shop, we drove up in front of the gate of the Kelby Nursery on Belasco Road. The house itself was set well back on the property, which covered about 4 acres. The entire nursery was surrounded by a 6-foot steel wire fence, and it looked like almost every available foot of ground inside was planted with some kind of a flower or shrub. Kelby met us at the gate.
Yes, what do you men want?
Police officers, are you Mr. Kelby?
Yes, what do you want?
Well, if you'll shut those dogs up for a minute, we'd like to ask you a few questions.
I'm busy now. Can't you come back tomorrow?
It's pretty important, Mr. Kelby. I think we better talk right now.
All right, if you have to. Red, Giant, down. You too, Jaime. Quiet.
All right, now what do you want?
Mind if we come inside?
Well, these watchdogs of mine are pretty vicious. We can talk here at the gate.
All right, Mr. Kelby, this is Sergeant Romero. My name's Friday. We've been assigned to look into your wife's disappearance.
Oh. Did you find anything yet?
Nothing definite. Maybe you can help us. Would you tell us exactly what happened the night your wife disappeared?
What do you mean, what happened?
Well, when did you last see her? When you first noticed she was gone?
We finished up Sunday night dinner about 7 o'clock, and I laid down for a nap. Agnes went out on the front porch for some air. Woke up a little before 8 and went outside to look for her. She was gone.
Nobody saw her leave, Mr. Kelby?
Not that I know of. Maybe some of our nosy neighbors, I don't know.
How about your stepson? Wasn't he around Sunday night?
Bruce? No. Went out to a show. Some other kids.
When did he get back from the show?
About 10, I think. Why?
Where's your stepson now?
Who are you looking for, my wife or my stepson?
Both, Mr. Kelby. Where's your stepson?
Gone. I took him over to my sister's in Alhambra. Been feeling bad since his mother disappeared. Figured the change would do him good.
When did you take him over to your sister's, Kelby?
This afternoon. What's that got to do with it?
We'd like to talk to Bruce.
No, I can't allow it. The boy's too upset. I can't allow it.
I'm afraid you're going to have to allow it.
Listen, mister, you can get off this property right now. No cops giving me sass.
Nobody's giving you sass, Kelby. We want to talk to your stepson, that's all. He might give us a clue as to the whereabouts of your wife.
And I say you can't see the boy. What's more, you cops couldn't find thorns in a rose patch. I'll get somebody else to look for Agnes. It's my business anyway, nobody else's.
It's our business, too, if anything's happened to her.
What are you talking about?
You better get your coat, Mr. Kelby. We're taking you in for questioning.
You come through that gate, and I'm going to let these dogs go, accidentally.
I'd hate to shoot the dogs. Now, go on in the house and get your coat. Eric Kelby turned and made his way up the path and into the house. 5 minutes later, he came out. Without a word to either of us, he came down the path, closed the gate behind him, and got into our car. On the way back to headquarters, he chatted pleasantly about the weather, the nursery business, and his dogs. When we pulled up in front of the city hall, we met the reason for his sudden change in temperament. His lawyer was waiting for us at the door. We took Kelby to one of the interrogation rooms. His lawyer tagged along. We tried to question him, but the lawyer objected to 2 out of every 3 questions we asked. It was hopeless, and we knew it. So did the lawyer. We released Kelby, but we did get the name and address of his sister where the stepson Bruce was staying. After they left, Ben and I got back in the car and drove out to Alhambra to check on the boy.
Forget he had this in pegged right, Joe. It's a real sleeper.
Yeah. I'd like to know how the stepson missed that date with us this afternoon.
Well, if the kid called us from the house, his stepfather could have overheard him.
It's possible. Sister's house ought to be along this block, shouldn't it?
Yeah, let's see. 1408, 1406. There it is, Joe. A great cottage, 1402.
Right. Well, it's a nice-looking little place, isn't it? Well-kept.
Yeah, it's a nice neighborhood. I wonder how the lot prices run out here. Somebody's coming.
Yes, what is it?
Police officers, ma'am. Are you Miss Kelby?
Bertha Kelby, yes, that's my name. Why?
We talked to your brother earlier today, Miss Kelby. He said that you brought his stepson, Bruce, here to stay for a while. We'd like to see him.
Bruce? Yes, he was here till about, an hour and a half ago. I went to the store, and when I came back, he was gone.
Have you any idea where he might be, Miss Kelby?
Well, I telephoned my brother Eric's place just before you came to the door. He's not there. I don't know where he might be. I'm worried about him. He seems so upset. This business about his mother's disappearance, you know.
Would you mind if we came in and looked around, Miss Kelby?
Well, no, not at all.
We went in and looked the house over from one end to the other. There wasn't a trace of the boy. We drove back to Kelby's nursery and satisfied ourselves the boy wasn't there. Then we came back to Alhambra and we kept an eye on Miss Bertha Kelby's home until midnight. No one came or went. At 5 minutes past midnight, the lights went off in the living room and a few minutes later in the back of the house. The next morning, when Ben and I checked in for work as usual at 8 o'clock, we met with Captain of Homicide, Frank Kearney.
What makes you two so positive there has been any foul play in this Kelby thing?
That's just it, Cap. We're not positive. It's a whole setup. It smells bad.
For instance?
That lawyer. If a man's innocent, he doesn't need a lawyer to sit with him in the interrogation room and tell him not to answer questions. Number two, that kid's telephone call.
Maybe he doesn't get along with his stepfather. It happens, you know. Maybe he's trying to get back at him for something or other.
Maybe. Then why is Kelby hiding him out?
You're sure he's hiding him out?
No other way to take it, Cap.
The Kelby woman walked away from her home Sunday night. Nobody saw her. She took nothing with her. No clothes, no luggage, no money. You checked with the family doctor?
Yesterday. He told us Mrs. Kelby was in perfect health. We double-checked the wanderer's file and the repeater's file and missing persons. Couldn't find her name in either one.
How about her relatives in town?
Haven't had a chance to talk to them yet, Cap. We'll check them this morning.
Well, one thing's certain. The woman couldn't have gone very far.
We checked the sheriff's office, the jails, the hospitals.
We've sent out a teletype and an APB. Every cop in the city has her description. She's been gone almost 4 days, but nobody's seen her. How does that add up to you?
It doesn't. You better move on it. Check every one of Mrs. Kelby's friends and relatives.
Right, Frank.
Then try the neighbors. As long as I've been a cop, neighbors have been able to tell everything about anyone.
All that day, Ben and I made the rounds. First stop was the Western National Bank, where Mrs. Kelby maintained her account. Her savings statement showed a total balance of $31,564.17. Her separate checking account had a balance of $842.71. At the Farmers Mutual, we found the record of an insurance policy issued to Agnes Trumbull Kelby. It was a 20-pay life policy covering the insured in the amount of $30,000. The beneficiary was listed as the insured son, Bruce Trumbull Kelby, if living upon the receipt of such due proof. If not, the insured's husband, Eric J. Kelby. By the time we finished checking her financial status, the odds were piling up fast. From only casual reports, we knew that Eric Kelby was a frugal man. If he was greedy as well, if he wanted or needed money badly enough to kill, then he had all the motives necessary to murder his wife. Maybe his stepson, too. Ben and I started to make the rounds of Mrs. Kelby's friends and relatives. Our first stop was at the apartment of Agnes Kelby's sister, a talkative maiden lady in her early 60s.
Agnes just isn't that kind. Oh, I'm worried sick about this. I really am. And Bruce, the poor lad, he must be heartsick. And Eric, what does Eric say about all this?
He says he thinks his wife left him.
Left him? Why, that's ridiculous. How strange.
Can you think of any good reason why your sister would leave Mr. Kelby?
Why, no. They had tiffs, of course, small ones. But, of course, there was that argument about Bruce. The two of them always seem to be arguing about Bruce.
How do you mean, ma'am?
Oh, well, raising the boy and all, you know. The last time I talked to them, they were tiffing about whether or not Bruce should be paid for working in the nursery for Eric. And the strangest thing, Eric seemed to be so upset about it all. Imagine. All on account of paying the boy a few dollars for good, honest work in that silly nursery. Well, you know, I'm the outspoken kind, and I just told Eric. Eric, I said, don't be an old meanie. Pay the boy.
That was the extent of the information which Mrs. Kelby's sister had to offer. Next, we called on an aunt, Mrs. James D. Trumbull, 83 years old. She could hardly understand our questions, let alone answer them. She hadn't seen her niece, Agnes, in a year. After that, we paid a visit to one of Mrs. Kelby's friends, a Mrs. Lillian Humboldt.
Well, I'm sorry, Sergeant, but I can't think of any good reason why she would leave him. Unless that silly business about Bruce got out of hand. You know, maybe Eric is just a little jealous of the boy.
Next, we called on Daisy McLeod, who worked as a day maid for Mrs. Kelby.
Officer, what Mr. and Mrs. Kelby thought, what they said, what they did, it's none of my business. I come in the morning, I do my work, I do it well. I'm not the nosy type, and I don't pry. I take half an hour for lunch, and when I'm through, I take my pay, and I don't expect tips, and I take the boss home. I'm not the peeking through the keyhole kind, sneaking around corners listening. But what I couldn't tell you about that man...
Exactly what do you mean, Miss McLeod?
Oh, he's a hard man, you know. They're always arguing about the boy. Bruce this, Bruce that. He's a nice boy, I think. He's never done anything to me. Oh, but the arguments. Him and her all the time. Should the boy be paid for working? Shouldn't he? Why not all the time?
When Ben and I finished with a list of Mrs. Kelby's friends, relatives, and employees, we started out on the neighbors. None of them saw Mrs. Kelby after 6 p.m. the night she disappeared. Two of the neighbors said they saw the porch light burning after 7 p.m., but both said the porch was empty. Mrs. Kelby was not sitting in her chair at the usual time after dinner. According to them, that was one of her habits. It was 6:10 by the time Ben and I got back to the office. The light was still burning in Captain Kearney's office.
Full day, Joe. A lot of mileage.
Yeah. I wonder what the captain's hanging around for.
Let's find out.
Get anything?
Pretty good luck, Cap.
Good. I've got some more for you. Just walked in 5 minutes ago.
What do you mean, Frank? Who walked in?
Bruce Kelby. He's waiting in the next room.
We went in the next room and met Bruce Kelby. He was small for a 17-year-old, dark-haired and a little on the sickly side. He told us that he couldn't keep the date he made with us on the phone because his stepfather apparently did overhear the conversation and drove him directly to his sister's home in Alhambra. We asked him why he was so sure that his stepfather was responsible for his mother's sudden disappearance.
For one thing, all three of us usually go to the early show on Sunday night. Eric, Mom, and me. But last Sunday, Eric said he wasn't feeling good and he wanted Mom to stay home and take care of him. Then he told me to go on ahead to the show, so I did.
What time did you get home, son?
About 9:30, 9:45.
What was your stepfather doing when you got home?
Sitting in the living room, reading the paper.
Did you notice anything unusual about the way he acted?
He was nervous and jumpy, more than usual, I think.
Anything else?
Yes, sir. When I came in through the front yard, I noticed the dogs had mud all over their paws. They'd been out somewhere in the nursery plots. And they won't go out in the plots unless Eric's with them. He doesn't want them to trample the seedlings.
What would your stepfather be doing out in the nursery at night? Does he usually do some work at night?
No, sir. None of the plots are even lighted. Only the greenhouses.
And the paths in the greenhouses are usually graveled, aren't they? No mud around.
It's my job to see that the greenhouse paths are kept graveled. I know they're not muddy. I fixed them the day before, Saturday.
What do you think it means, son?
I don't know. I don't want to think about it. I just know he's done something. He's done something to her.
Did your stepfather give you any reason for keeping you away from the police officers the other day?
No, sir. He said people were getting nosy, and he said it might be better for me over at Aunt Bertha's. She's his sister.
Do you think your Aunt Bertha might know where your mother is?
No, we hardly ever see her. We don't know her well at all.
We've heard your mother and your stepfather argued about whether you should be paid for your work in the nursery.
When I started to work for him, he promised he'd pay me. I was saving up to buy a 31 Model A. And then after a couple of months, when he didn't pay me, I asked him. He told me I ought to be glad to work for him for nothing.
And your mother argued with him over that?
Sure, it was her money that bought the nursery anyway.
How'd you get away from your aunt's place last night?
Well, Bertha had some shopping to do, and she left me alone. She locked the door to my room. Even the screen over the window in my room was nailed down, but I kicked it out and got away. I stayed at a friend's house last night.
Thought about where you're going to stay tonight?
I don't know. But I'm not going home, and I'm not going back to Bertha's place either. I'll get a room.
How'd you like to stay at my house a few days?
Sure nice of you, sir. Maybe I'd better not. Mom might not like it.
Oh, I'll take care of that.
Now let's hop out and get some dinner.
Sure darn nice of you, sir.
All right, son. Come with me.
What do you think, Joe?
He could be lying. Yeah.
Now what, Cap? Should we bring Kelby in again?
No, not yet. He's found out by now from his sister that the boy's gone. He probably figures the police station is the first place he'd come.
Wouldn't do much good pulling him in now, Ben. We couldn't even question him. 10 to 1 his lawyer'd be waiting for us when we got back.
That's the problem. How do we get to this Kelby without his lawyer finding out?
Well, what about the early morning, Cap? Say tomorrow, about 5 or 6 a.m. Think you'd be looking for us then?
Yeah, that might do it.
We can just get by that pack of hounds he owns without waking the whole neighborhood. Might work.
If we could just question him alone, I got an idea it wouldn't take much to make him cop out.
All right, give it a try. Get out there in the early morning and bring him in for questioning as quietly as possible. I'll be in at 6 a.m. If you want me before then, call me at home.
All right, Frank.
Kelby's got a smart lawyer. It's going to be plenty hard to convict him without a body and corroborating evidence.
He's got 4 acres out there, Cap. You can hide a lot of bodies in 4 acres.
Well, that's what I mean. This case isn't ending. It's just beginning.
The next morning, Ben and I met at the office about a few minutes past 4 a.m. We had a cup of coffee and a donut at an all-night restaurant, and then we started for the Kelby place out on Belasco Road. We took 4 pounds of fresh horse meat with us to keep the dogs quiet if they raised a fuss. It was 28 minutes past 4 when Ben pulled the car to a stop a few hundred feet from the gate to the Kelby nursery. We got out of the car and made our way down the road to the gate. I reached in and tried the latch. It was padlocked. The dogs started in. Okay, Ben, looks like we'll have to jump the fence. Toss some of that horse meat over to him.
Yeah, here.
That's it. Come on, let's climb.
Keep an eye on those hounds. Looks like they could chew your leg off.
Yeah. Here comes a third one, Ben. Toss some more meat.
Yeah, there you are, boy. Go get it. Go get it, boy. Here.
Look, Ben, light's going on in the house.
Come on, let's make it fast.
Who is it? Who's there? I'll set the dogs on you.
Police officers, Mr. Kelby.
What? What are you doing out here this time of night?
You're under arrest, Kelby. Get your coat.
You cops are asking for a peck of trouble.
Get your coat.
Where's my stepson? What have you done with him?
What have you done with your wife?
You're going to pay for this. I'll have your jobs.
That's not the first time we heard that, Kelby. Let's go. Light's burning in the captain's office.
Yeah. All right, Kelby, in here.
Pay for this, mark my word.
Ben, take him in the office here and stay with him. I'll see if Frank's in yet.
Right, Joe. Come on, Kelby, inside.
Friday, did you bring in Kelby?
He's down in the interrogation room. Ben's with him.
Somebody saw you.
Don't think so.
They must have. Kelby's lawyer's sitting in the next room.
Kelby again refused to answer any questions without the advice of his attorney. We released him. That day, Captain Kearney sent out 2 men to keep an eye on the nursery and report on all of Kelby's movements. Shortly after 7 o'clock that night, just after nightfall, we tried once again to bring in Kelby for questioning without his lawyer's knowledge. It didn't work. A little after we booked him, his lawyer obtained a writ of habeas corpus. We had to release him again. The 2 men assigned to stake out the Kelby place reported definitely that somebody was tipping the lawyer whenever unknown visitors showed up at the nursery and drove off with Kelby. There was nothing we could do about it. The next morning, Kearney came up with a lead.
I had a long talk with the boy last night. Accidentally, I think he's given us a pretty good lead.
Yeah?
There's only one way we'll ever get a conviction. That's by finding the body and evidence to tie Kelby in.
Yeah, that'll do it. Where do we start looking?
In a new rose bed next to one of the greenhouses in Kelby's nursery.
Hmm?
The kid came up with it last night.
How come?
First, Kelby's crazy about saving a dollar and making one.
Yeah.
In the nursery trade, especially where you have a limited area to work in, like Kelby, you cultivate every foot of ground. Every bit of soil you got is planted with something.
Mm-hmm.
Kelby's not the type to waste anything. Especially he's not the kind that would let ground lie fallow when he could plant something that might bring in a few dollars next season. Bruce tells me his stepfather has every inch of those 4 acres planted. Every inch. Except a 6 by 9 foot plot of ground in that rose garden.
Oh, that sounds like a long shot to me, Frank.
The boy said he prepared that piece of ground for planting late Saturday afternoon. His stepfather wanted it ready for Sunday morning. The plot of ground still vacant.
Might have planted it yesterday, Cap. When's the last time you checked?
Before I came to work this morning. I called the men on stakeout next to the nursery. They tell me the plot's still empty.
Mm-hmm. It's worth a chance, Frank. When do we look it over?
Tonight. I don't want Kelby or his lawyer to know a thing until we find that body.
Well, how are we going to work it?
We load her up a crew from the crime lab. They can take probings through that plot and all around it. They can tell us without any guesswork how deep that ground's been worked over lately.
When do you want to start?
Be here in the office at 8:30 tonight. If my hunches are any good, we'll find a body.
It was 9:10 that night when we got to the Kelby place. Lieutenant Lee Jones and his assistants, Kearney, Ben, and two other men from homicide. The men on stakeout told us that Kelby had left about 20 minutes before in a dark blue coupe. Ben brought along the usual supply of horse meat for the dog, so we didn't have any trouble there. We found the empty plot of ground in the rose bed next to the greenhouse, exactly as Bruce described it to Kearney.
Ground's been worked over all right, boys. At least 4 to 5 feet down.
All right, Lee, let's start digging. Romero, take care of the dogs. Watson, grab one of these shovels.
Right, Cap.
Hey, Kelby said these dogs were vicious, didn't he?
Yeah, why?
Look at these hounds. They're no more vicious than a lively colt, look.
Higgins, get that light over here, will you? Thanks.
What is it, Lee?
Let me see. Teeth. Set of false teeth.
Been in the ground long?
Don't think so, judging from the shape they're in.
How far down would you say you are, Lee?
A couple of feet. Ground's real soft.
Lee, come here a minute.
What is it?
Body. Here's the shoulder.
All right, you men over here with Watson. Get the dirt off the face. Romero, you got a picture of the Kelby woman?
Yeah, Cap. Let's see. Oh, here it is.
Thanks. Get the light down here.
Hunch paid off, Frank. That's her. Ben and I went back to the car and notified communications to broadcast a want for murder on Eric Kelby. His description, together with a description of the car and license number of the car he was driving, was rebroadcast every 15 minutes. Then we went back to check the house. We found the front door unlocked. We went inside and looked around. In one bedroom, we found clothes scattered over the bed and the floor. There was only one old suit remaining in the closet. On the table next to the bed, we found an airline's timetable. We got to the phone and notified communications to alert all police details at railroad stations, bus terminals, and airlines, and then to send out an APB on the teletype. After that, we checked with the airlines. One of them told us that a man answering Kelby's description had booked passage for Mexico City. The plane was scheduled to take off at 10:40 that night from Burbank Airport. Ben's watch said 10:04. We called the detail at the airport and alerted them. Then we drove over to check in person. It was 10:35 p.m. when Ben and I took up our positions just inside Gate 3, where passengers were boarding Flight 72 for Mexico City.
He's cutting it close, Joe. Got about 4 minutes more to make that plane.
We waited. The crowd got thicker as departure time came closer. At 10:39, Eric Kelby came through the main entrance, across the terminal, through Gate 3, into a pair of handcuffs.
I don't understand. What does this mean?
We found your wife's body, Kelby.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
In the rose patch next to the greenhouse. Your lawyer can't help this time.
Mexico City. Would have been a nice trip. Expensive.
I'll plead insanity. I didn't know what I was doing.
Be a nice vacation next year, Joe, Mexico City. I'm going to talk to my wife about it.
I didn't mean it. She slapped me. We were arguing about the boy. I didn't mean it.
I don't know if you did or not, Kelby, but you killed her. Come on. You missed your plane.
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
Eric Kelby was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. He is now awaiting execution in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary. You have just heard the 14th in a new series of authentic cases transcribed from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the office of W.A. Wharton, Acting Chief of Police, Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to William J. Weston, Jr. of the Washington, D.C. Police Department, who on the evening of March 4th, 1945, gave his life so that yours might be more secure. Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. If you enjoyed tonight's production of Dragnet, you'll want to listen to Richard Diamond, private detective, as played by the screen's romantic tough guy, Dick Powell.
The Pet Milk Show, usually heard at this time, has moved to a new time period on Sunday nights. Be sure to hear Larry Douglas and Kay Armon on the new Pet Milk Show tomorrow night on NBC. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
And you can hear Dragnet each weekday, Monday through Friday, at 8 a.m. and p.m. Eastern Time on the Radio Theater Channel. Next up, we have an episode of Escape, and this is called Treasure Incorporated. It's from 1950.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to a lush tropical island in the Caribbean, a paradise lost through the overpowering greed of a lovely woman and a dangerous man, as John and Gwen Bagney tell it in their exciting tale, Treasure Incorporated.
Well, are you coming?
Huh?
You're coming with me, or aren't you?
What for?
I feel lucky. Got a feeling today is going to be the day.
You said that for months. Why don't you leave me alone?
She turned away and stared out the window at the jungle. Her face was a dissatisfied mask. She had on that old faded red beach dress. She wore it all the time now. And a sloppy pair of slippers. Her hair was pulled back off her neck with a piece of string. Matted. And that wry, crisp figure she'd once had was going fast.
He's up there.
Sure, he's up there. He's always up there.
I'm not going with you.
All right. Stay, I don't care. You're no help to me anymore.
And it won't do you any good to go either. Burn yourself up in this tropic sun and for what? Not while he's up there watching. Always watching.
Who are you trying to kid? You know you'll sneak up there to see him the minute I'm gone. And he'll just kick you out again.
Shut up.
Look at yourself. Not even good enough for that beachcomber.
Shut up. Shut up!
That was Amanda. And I'd once thought her beautiful. And I'd thought this island was beautiful. A paradise. It seemed a million years ago when I first told Brewer about it.
All right, Eddie. So you found a pretty island in the West Indies. Now
what? Oh, you should see the island, Brewer. More than a square mile of tropical paradise, just as nature made it. Complete with native village and volcano. With enough money, I can get a 25-year lease. I've got it all figured out, Brewer. I can make it the best-paying resort in the Caribbean.
Oh, I don't know, Eddie. There's so many resorts. What do you think, Amanda?
Sounds intriguing. Why not, Paul?
Believe me, it's surefire with a gimmick like mine.
Gimmick?
Buried pirate treasure. How do you like that for tourist bait?
Eddie, I'm afraid you're dreaming. There's never any treasure in those places.
Oh, I know that. That's what makes my gimmick so good. I'm going to bury the treasure myself.
You are?
Oh, sure, nothing too valuable. Just bait, you understand? You know, old Spanish coins, pieces of eight, daggers, bits of old sea chests.
Can you get that sort of thing?
Oh, I can get it. I know a guy who handles antiques. He can get it for me. Well, what do you think of it? Is that a gimmick or is that a gimmick?
Eddie, you're a genius.
You like it, Brewer?
Well, it sounds good, but I'd have to think about it. How about a drink?
Okay.
I'll fix this one. Scotch all right?
Oh, yeah, it's fine. Think he'll go for it, Amanda?
He'll go for it.
You sure? He didn't sound so positive.
Relax, Eddie. Don't worry so much. I'll get your island for you.
Not for me, baby. For us.
Eddie, take it easy. Remember, I still belong to Brewer.
That's Amanda, the kind of a woman that always gets what she wants. She got me my island. I started planning the resort. Brewer was to supply the money, and I was to be the front man. It was a great plan. It couldn't miss. But I'd figured without Clive. I'll never forget the first time I saw Clive, the only white man on the island. He was bald, but he was young. He had a blonde beard. He was sitting in a tangle of jungle wearing nothing but a pair of white ducks ripped off at the knee and some binoculars slung about his neck with a length of vine. He was painting a seascape. Hiya, Gillespie's the name, Eddie Gillespie. I've been looking over the island.
I know. I've been watching you.
Terrific place. Say, that volcano, any chance of it erupting?
No, it's dead. Dead many years.
Well, that's a relief. Say, I'm sure surprised to find a white man here.
You are? Why?
Well, so far away from civilization, nothing to do.
And then what are you doing here?
Me? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put this island on the map.
Really?
Yep. See that beat-up building down there by the beach?
That once was a fine old plantation house.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to turn it into a swanky hotel.
Hotel?
Sure. Perfect spot for it with all those palm trees around it. And a golf course sweeping up over that hill. Of course, we'll have to clean all those dirty vines out. That dock is a pretty sick-looking thing, but the harbors are natural. What are you looking at through the binoculars?
Devil's Cove.
Why? What's going on down there?
Nothing. I'm painting it.
Through binoculars? Why don't you walk down there if you want to paint it?
I prefer it this way.
That's the tropics for you. How lazy can you get?
Mr. Gillespie, after you've been here a while, you'll learn to go with the island, not try to change it.
Oh, you just wait and see. When I get through with this place, I'll make Nassau and Jamaica look like Rockaway Beach. Incidentally, those natives, they dress that way all the time in those faded old rags.
You don't like it?
Well, you gotta keep it quaint, you know, as advertised. Gotta give the tourists dollar value. We'll fix up the natives with bandanas and bright sashes, necklaces of coral, big earrings, baskets of fruit on their heads. Of course, they'll have to quit wearing those shoes.
How about rings through their noses and a bone in their hair?
You know, I get the feeling you're not going to be very cooperative.
It took me years to find a place that was remote from the world, and now that I have, I don't want it destroyed.
Destroyed? Why, man, you're crazy. I'm going to do things for this island. I'll have this place humming in no time, and I'll... What's the matter? Don't you think I can do it?
No, I don't, and I'll tell you why. Through the centuries, 6 flags have flown over this island, and each flag brought colonization and industry. Sugar, rum, the leaves of the bay tree, but not one of them could survive. Not one of them could hold back nature, the winds, the damp rot, the jungle, the vines that creep constantly day and night and snaring everything they touch. They couldn't do it, Mr. Gillespie, and neither can you or your hotel.
No. You just watch me.
I will. But if I thought you had one chance in a million to succeed, do you know what I'd do?
What?
I'd kill you.
In the beginning, he stayed up on top of that hill of his like he owned the world. He ignored me completely until my tractors and bulldozers went to work. Then he began to come down more and more. I never heard him coming, and yet he always seemed to be around. And as I ran into trouble, wind, rain, rot, rats, I had to fight them all. It seemed to amuse him to watch me.
Is your paradise fighting your back, Mr. Gillespie?
Why don't you go up on your hill and stay there?
What a beautiful swimming pool. A symbol of civilization. Do you expect it to last?
Why, of course it'll last. Why don't you leave me alone?
Be careful. It's bad to lose one's temper. The heat, you know.
Yes, heat. Always heat. But I wouldn't give in to it. I drove myself. I drove everybody who worked for me. Come on, boys. We got 2 more hours of daylight. Get those vines out.
They do grow, don't they? Huh?
What do you want?
I like to watch you fight them. It's such a useless task. They'll grow over you in the end, you know.
Yeah? Well, I'll civilize this island. I'll show you. Go
Go on and laugh all you want, but you'll see. When Eddie Gillespie starts something, he finishes it.
Before the summer was over, we cleaned away all the vines and seeded the golf course. We dynamited the harbor, rebuilt the docks, working 18 hours a day. And then one afternoon, just before the hotel was finished, she arrived. I just knocked off for the day, and I was sprawling in my hammock in front of my hut.
Hello, Eddie.
Amanda. What are you doing here? You weren't supposed to come until the hotel was open.
Aren't you glad to see me?
Where's Brewer? How did you get here?
In a launch.
All the way from New York?
Of course not. We've been anchored at Charlotte Amelia for a week.
You didn't break with Brewer, did you? Told you not to break with him until after the hotel was finished.
Don't get excited, Eddie. Brewer doesn't even know I'm here. He left this morning for Puerto Rico on a big deal.
Oh.
You haven't said you're glad to see me.
I've forgotten. It's been so long, I've forgotten how beautiful you are.
Eddie.
Look, Amanda, you better go back if Brewer finds out that you've been
What's
here.
The matter, Eddie? Are you afraid of Brewer?
Of course I'm not afraid, but use your head. He financed my island. I'm going to take his girl away from him. Until I get on my feet here, let's keep everything on the up and up. What's so funny?
You and Brewer.
What about Brewer?
I was thinking of Brewer keeping everything on the up and up on his side. Look, Eddie, why do you think he set you up on this island? Because he wanted to own a hotel? A resort?
What do you mean? It was an investment.
I'll say it was.
Well, if you've got a point, Amanda, get to it.
I will. Treasure. That's the point. $1 million worth of buried treasure.
$1 million? You're crazy. That stuff isn't worth anything.
I'm talking about a real treasure. The diamonds and emeralds and the pearls. The treasure Brewer is going to dig up.
You mean there's $1 million worth of stuff buried on this island?
Not yet. But there will be after Brewer buries it.
That doesn't make sense. Why would he do a thing like that?
Oh, it makes sense. Brewer always makes sense. You know what he did? He bought a huge lot of stolen jewelry from an international fence. The pieces were so identifiable and so hot he was able to buy it for a song. But he couldn't get rid of it. Then you came along. Eddie Gillespie with his little island and his buried treasure gimmick.
Wait a minute. He told you this?
I was with him. We were on the yacht not far off the Azores when we made rendezvous with another boat and took the jewels aboard. And now Brewer's in Puerto Rico having the stones taken out of their settings. And when the time comes, he's going to dig them up out of your island in a moldy old sea chest in front of witnesses. Got every angle covered. All legitimate.
So what?
Aren't you interested?
Well, if that's what he wants to do, that's his business. I've got the island and I'll have you.
Will you?
Amanda, what's the matter with you? What's eating you?
$1 million. I want it, Eddie. If you really want me to break with Brewer, you'll get it.
What kind of talk is that? I thought you loved me.
I do, Eddie. That's the point. I want us to have the money.
But we'll have each other.
That's not enough, Eddie. I want that million.
I got a good mind to...
What, Eddie?
Shh, shh, shh. There's someone on the brush. Who's there? Who is it?
Good evening.
Clive, what are you doing here? You're always sneaking around.
You're getting angry again.
Get out of here. What are you laughing at?
I was just thinking how much trouble can be caused by $1 million.
In just a moment, we will return to Escape. But first, it's a long time between fun on the weekends, but it's a lot shorter if you find the midweek fun that's here on most of these same CBS stations every Wednesday night. Midweek fun with Groucho Marx, Bing Crosby, and Burns and Allen in 1-2-3 order. Try listening to them all every Wednesday night. Groucho, Bing, and George and Gracie. And you'll find the week speeding by much more merrily. And now we return you to the second act of Escape.
She went back and I was left to finish the hotel. But the whole thing had soured for me. All my enthusiasm for the project was gone. But I buried the tourist bait, the pirate treasure. I scattered the pieces of eight, the rusted hinges, all the old relics over the island as per plan. And then I was open for business and the tourists began to pour in. A change came over Clive. Now he set up his easel down by the dock, and he was gay and gregarious, and I trusted him less and less. He was up to something. And what galled me, the tourists were crazy about him.
Whatever made you become a beachcomber, Clive?
Women? Beautiful women like yourself. They drove me to it.
Oh, Clive, I don't believe a word you're saying, but it's fun. Wherever did you get him, Mr. Gillespie? He's priceless.
Clive, why...
I came with the island, standard equipment, along with the volcano and the treasure.
Is there really treasure on the island?
Well, you found a piece of an old saber yesterday, didn't you?
Yes, and my husband found a golden sovereign, but I mean real treasure. Chests full of gold.
Look for it, Mrs. Chapman. Every cove, every bay. It could be anywhere, on the mountain, in the jungle... Legend says that Captain Kidd himself stopped here, loaded with treasure from the Spanish Main. He slew all the Caribs, every single one, buried his loot, and sailed away. And, as legend has it, he never came back.
Just think of finding it.
Then dig, Mrs. Chapman, dig. Take one of our donkeys and a pick and shovel and go out on the trail.
Oh, I will. I'm going again this morning. Mr. Gillespie, I'm simply mad about your island.
Thank you.
Cynthia, darling.
Oh, there's my husband. Here I am, Fred.
Come along, dear.
See you boys later.
Aren't you overdoing it?
I'm just being helpful. Adding local color.
All that stuff about a legend. You didn't talk that way when I first came here.
Things are different now. By the way, when is your pirate coming?
Pirate?
Brewer, I think you called him.
It was 2 days later that Brewer and Amanda arrived. I was on the veranda watching as the seaplane settled on the water. I watched them walk up to the hotel. Oh, yes. Clive was on the dock painting. He watched them, too.
Hello, Eddie.
Hello, Eddie.
Hi.
Good to see you, Eddie. You've done a great job with the hotel.
Paradise. That's the name for it, all right.
It's the best investment I ever made, Eddie. Well, I even read about your island in the New York papers. You got a big spread about tourists finding old pieces of eight in an old sea chest. Oh, that was positive inspiration, Eddie.
Wasn't it?
What's the matter? Don't you feel well? You look tired. You've been working too hard. Come on up to the room. We'll have a drink.
He was so charming and so relaxed, I began to wonder if Amanda had told me the truth. For the next week or so, I watched him all the time. But he was just a guy on vacation having a whale of a good time.
Look at him. The life of the party.
Come on outside. I want to talk to you. You know, I think you lied to me. I don't think there is any treasure.
Don't be a fool. Of course there is.
And when is he going to bury it?
I don't know. We'll just have to wait.
If I find out that you lied...
Eddie, you don't believe I...
Maybe you're trying to pull some kind of a double cross on me.
Let's go back, Eddie.
Well, this is the hard way to get X.
I think you sound beautiful.
Well, you want exercise? Why don't you come out and dig with us, Brewer?
I will one of these days.
Oh, that's what you've been saying all week. Look at my waistline. I've taken off an inch.
Why don't you come tomorrow, Mr. Brewer? It's lots of fun.
I like to sleep in the morning.
Oh, come on.
Sure, come on. Be a sport.
Okay, I'll dig with you tomorrow morning. Who knows? I might be lucky.
Tomorrow morning? Eddie, that means he'll have to bury it tonight.
Yeah.
You'll have to watch him. Don't let him out of your sight.
I waited outside until every window was dark, until the hotel was quiet. I waited and waited, but he didn't come. And still I waited until...
Still up, Eddie?
Clive!
You might as well get your sleep. He isn't going to bury the treasure tonight.
What do you mean? How do you know?
Because he's already buried it.
Well, you're crazy. He couldn't have. I've watched him constantly.
Apparently not close enough. What about the hour just before dinner when you and the girl were on the other side of the volcano?
Where did he bury it? Tell me.
In Devil's Cove.
Devil's Cove?
Oh, there's no point in your going there now. You don't think I'd leave it there, do you? I dug it up.
I know I couldn't trust you. All that talk about getting away from civilization, you know, better than anybody else.
Oh, I'm not going to keep the jewels. What would I do with money?
Yeah? And where are they?
I buried them again.
You what?
You ought to thank me. I'm making an honest man out of you, Eddie. You advertised buried treasure on your island. Well, now you have it. Like you said, gotta give the tourist dollar value.
Why, you...
Just think, tomorrow or the day after, or next month, one of your tourists will dig it up, as advertised.
Clive, look, don't do this to me. If you don't want the jewels, just tell me where they are. I'll give you anything, only just tell me.
And miss all the fun? Oh, no.
Morning, Eddie.
Good morning.
Great day, isn't it? You coming out of the diggings with us?
No, Brewer, I've got some work to do here.
Say, you look tired, Eddie. You work too hard. You ought to take it easy. Have some fun, relax.
Relax? I wondered how relaxed he'd be when all he dug up was dirt. I watched him go off down the trail with the other guests. I tried to concentrate on my work. The hotel was quiet. Everyone was at the diggings, but I couldn't think. I was checking supplies in the wine cellar when Amanda came back.
You should have been there, Eddie. Oh, you should have seen his face when he found it was gone. Where'd you put it, Eddie?
I haven't got it.
Of course you have.
I told you I don't have it.
What are you trying to do? Double-cross me?
Brewer!
Paul, I...
I'll take care of you later, Amanda.
But, Paul, he forced me to tell him.
She's lying.
All right, Eddie. Where is
it? I don't know.
Come on, Eddie, talk.
I haven't got it, I tell you. Clive took it.
Clive, who's that?
Clive, the beachcomber. He saw you bury it, he dug it up and buried it again.
Nobody saw me bury it except maybe you.
Wait a minute, will you? I tell you, it's true.
Talk. Where'd you put it? Talk. Talk.
It's no use. I haven't got it.
You'll tell me the truth if I have to beat you.
Amanda.
I had to do it.
He killed it.
Don't worry, everyone's at the diggings. No one could have heard it. Oh, Eddie, your face.
What'll we do with him?
Well, when everyone's asleep, we'll get rid of him. I'm glad I killed him, Eddie. Now it all belongs to us.
I haven't got it.
You mean you were telling the truth about that beachcomber?
Yeah, he moved it. He buried it some other place because he wants one of the tourists to find it. It's part of his plan to get even with me.
We can't let anyone else find it, Eddie. We've got to do something.
Oh, my head.
Eddie, listen to me. We've got to get rid of the tourists.
Yeah. Got to get rid of them, every one of them. We waited until siesta, when all the guests would be asleep in their rooms. Then we went to the construction shed for the dynamite that was left over from blasting the harbor. We loaded it and Brewer onto a donkey and went up the back trail to the volcano crater. I pushed Brewer into the crater, planted the dynamite inside the top edge. Amanda strung the wire down the slope to a cave on the east side of the island. I went down to the cave. My island was asleep. I had my hand on the plunger. I was ready to throw it, and then I realized fully what I was about to do. With one gesture, I'd be destroying everything I'd worked so hard for.
Eddie, what's the matter?
I can't do it.
Give it to me.
No, Amanda, no! I sat on the side of the mountain and watched the island become alive with frantic, frightened people. They streamed out of the hotel, half-dressed, clutching their belongings. They tripped over one another in their frenzy to get to their boats, terrified of a dead volcano. Our threatened eruption was a complete success. By nightfall, there wasn't a tourist on the island. Even the natives had scurried away in their canoes like so many frightened rats. And there were just the three of us left, Amanda, Clive, and me.
How will we get the treasure? We can't dig up the whole island.
We won't have to. Any man that's got that much loot stashed away will dig it up himself. You can't tell me money doesn't mean anything to him. We'll wait. And we did. We waited and got on each other's nerves. We waited until we couldn't stand it anymore. But Clive didn't make a move to dig it up. It was clear he'd never go near it as long as we were there. Our only escape was to dig. We started in systematically, on the east side of the island, then the north, in the rain, in the wind, in the boiling sun.
This heat, I can't take it anymore, Eddie. I'm tired.
I never thought I'd hear you say that. This was all your idea, don't forget.
I don't care, Eddie. Why don't you give it up? Get away from here.
What? Go and let him have it all now. So that's what you want, is it? It's Clive now, huh? You and Clive. Well, you won't get your treasure that way. I'm staying, and I'm going to dig without you.
I'm going to dig until I drop. It was hot. It was always hot. My eyes ached from the glare of the sun, but I forced myself to keep going. For days, I'd been digging near the old sugar mill. But today, I had a feeling I'd be lucky. My pick hit something hard. I dropped to my knees and furiously began to claw the dirt with my hands. But it was only rock, a big rock. I moved it aside, and there it was. A pearl. One single pearl framed by the fresh imprint of a sea chest. And then I heard him from a long way off. Clive, and he was laughing at me. He was watching me through those binoculars of his, and he was laughing at me. And suddenly I knew what his game was. That's why I hadn't found the treasure in all this time, because he'd kept moving it. And he'd left a pearl behind this time to tell me he'd done it. I knew then what I had to do. I had to kill him. I went up the hill by the back trail. And just at the top, I stopped and took a firmer grip on my pick. Clive's back was to me. He was sitting exactly the way he had been the first time I saw him, in a tangle of vines painting through binoculars. I crept up to him. I raised my pick and brought it down with all my strength. But it was too late. He'd sensed me and ducked the blow. The pick had ripped through the canvas. In fury, I raised to strike it again, and my hands froze in midair as I stared at the torn canvas. It was a picture of me, and the pick had pierced my chest. Me, holding a pearl in my hand, and the look on the face he'd painted was horrible. The pick slid out of my hands.
Here's your pick, Eddie. Take it. You'll need it. Take it, Eddie, and dig. And by the way, I had to kick Amanda out again today. Keep her home, will you?
That was months ago. How many months? I've lost count. The jungle has claimed the island again, just like he said it would. The damp rot, the hurricanes, the vines. The hotel sags on its timbers, and the big front door is gone. The last wind took most of the roof. And there are bougainvillea roots growing up through the cracks in the swimming pool. The jungle has claimed Amanda, too. She's lost interest in everything, except Clive, and he won't have her. She doesn't care about the treasure anymore. She won't dig. But not me. The jungle's not going to get me. Nothing is going to stop Eddie Gillespie. Every day I dig. Once in a while I hear him up on top of the hill laughing. And I know he's moved it again. But someday I'll beat him to it. Someday I'll find it. Yeah. Someday.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Tonight we have presented Treasure Incorporated by John and Gwen Bagney. Featured in the cast were Frank Lovejoy as Eddie, John Hoyt as Clive, Mary Lansing as Amanda, and Harry Bartell as Brewer. Also heard were Eileen Prince and Paul Frees. Special music was arranged and conducted by Del Castillo. Next week...
You are sitting in a cheerless gray cell, staring at the rain through the small barred window above your head, and struggling desperately to keep your sanity, for in 12 hours you must die or escape.
Next week, we escape with James Poe's seething tale of blasphemous terror and violent death, Present Tense, starring Vincent Price. Goodbye, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. It's no joke when an accident happens to you, and an accident can happen to you. This winter, take time to be careful. Whether you're driving or walking in traffic, be cautious. Cross streets with care. Drive safely. Keep your wits and windshield clear.
In traffic, walking, or driving, be careful. Be sure to join us at this same time next week when we offer you Escape, starring Vincent Price. And now stay tuned for Pursuit, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.